Hey, everybody. Before we start this week's show, I wanted to do a little shout out. I was having some trouble with internet, social media, marketing, all that kind of stuff, web design, and I hired a great virtual assistant company. It's called Monkey Creative. Kind of a strange name. But man, these guys are the best. They're located all over the country, but they're able to work for me as a group. And what's neat is I got a special assistant assigned to me. Her name's Kia, and she does an amazing job. So if you have any work or need any help with a website, marketing, or social media, reach out to Monkey Creative. You'll be connected with the leader of the clan, Chandler, and he is so good. He's a good communicator, negotiator, and will work with you to help put together the right project for you. I highly recommend them, Monkey Creative. All right, let's get into this week's show.
This is another episode of Stand Up Comedy, your host and MC, celebrating 40 plus years on the fringe of show business. Stories, interviews, and comedy sets from the famous and not so famous. Here's your host and MC, Scott Edwards.
Hi, welcome to another podcast, and we got something different and exciting for you this week. I am in the pleasure company of three lovely ladies, all of whom worked for me back in the day, and we're going to talk about what it's like being an employee at a comedy club. Ladies and gentlemen, let's hear it for Patty Sewell, Sherry Morissette, and Lynn Stobener. Well, that was pretty incredible. All right. So let's kick things off. Patty and Sherry, we already talked to Lynn in an earlier podcast. She was a hostess, kitchen manager, house MC, ended up being an entertainer, and ended up managing some of my clubs. So she's historically very important. But the club also wouldn't have had its success without a really tremendous staff that stuck around for many years. And part of that staff were Patty and Sherry, who were cocktail waitresses back in the day. So Patty, we'll start with you. How did you come to work for me at Laughs?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that I was head waitress.
And Scott knows what that's all about.
Yeah, she earned the title. But I'm bummed. Well, we got that out of the way fast.
Any millennial listening out there, it was okay to say that back then.
I actually got started at Laughs Unlimited because I was dating your bartender, one of your bartenders there. And I came in one night with him just to see the show. And it was at Birdcage.
Was it a secret person, or do we know who this was?
This was Ben Tony.
Oh, I didn't. I thought you guys met at the club. So you guys had met previously, no. And he brought you in.
Oh, yeah. We had been dating for a while.
Ben Tony is another entertainer / employee that we interviewed in a previous show. So I knew you guys had dated for a couple of years, but I didn't know it was. I thought you met at Laughs. So it was pre-Laughs. Well, that's interesting. Yeah. So you came in as a guest and audience member. Did you have a good time?
I had a great time. I remember it was wonderful. And I loved the whole atmosphere of the club itself. And they happened to be short a waitress that night. And Ben Tony mentioned to, was it you, Lynn?
No,
or
was it was Rich.
Could have been Rich,
Richie, maybe.
Or Bob.
Or Bob probably. You know, my girlfriend is out there in the audience, and I know she's had cocktail waitress experience. So I just kind of went, sure, I'll do it. So you waitressed that night?
You, instead of being in the audience? Yeah. I did not know that. That's hilarious.
It was great.
On-the-job training at Laughs Unlimited. Right.
To tell you the truth, if I'm remembering correctly, I am not sure if actually Patty ever legally worked. Legally by meaning by – no, I don't mean it that way. She legally worked. But in other words, she was never like an official staff member. She was always just filling in.
I think actually, a very brief period downtown at the Old Sacramento Club.
Right.
I was on payroll. Otherwise, you know, I was just fill-in, which meant I didn't really have to follow all of the same rules.
Oh, that's so funny. Sherry, how about
that's
you?
Right. You know, I started at Laughs because I needed a job. I had two little boys at home. I just moved back from Hawaii. And so my kids didn't have daycare, so I sent my husband with the kids at 5 o'clock, and I would come to the club at 6 o'clock.
Did you just apply and got hired?
I did. I applied and interviewed, and
And that was at Birdcage?
I did end up at Birdcage.
Yeah, and Richie was the manager there.
Richie was the manager.
And so had you waitressed previously?
I did in Hawaii, and I bartended.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
So what would you say the biggest difference between waitressing in a regular restaurant bar versus a comedy club?
The energy, the love, the people. I loved
absolutely
watching the guys up on stage. Loved watching Lynn come in and MC, make me so happy. It was like not even coming to a job.
Yeah.
It was coming for fun.
It was completely fun all the time.
And made good money.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Made good money back then. Well, I remember one thing in particular that struck me as very different from other cocktail jobs I had had is that there's a show going on. So of course you're serving drinks in between, you know, during the show, and it's dark and you got to be quiet. And I remember thinking, I've got all these long neck beers, 20 long neck beers on my tray, and I have to squat so I get out of the way of the people behind me. And that's no easy trick sometimes. And I remember that was strange, but I guess it was good for my quads.
I did do every job at Laughs except for the hardest, which was the cocktail waitressing cocktail serving. And it is. It's not like any establishment, like a dance. I mean, you do. You have to be invisible, yet you have to be out there all the time.
You're giving good service while being invisible. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
And it was difficult because you didn't want to block or interrupt.
Right.
And sometimes if you're serving the front row, you're doing business. You're exchanging money and selling drinks, mm-hmm. and you're doing it while respecting somebody maybe 3 feet away trying to entertain people.
Right.
And we were so lucky, and we talked about this during Lynn's interview, that we just happened to get a magically great staff. People that enjoyed coming to work, like you said. It wasn't like a job. It was more family. Mm-hmm. We did a lot of things outside of work like family. But and it's good to hear that you made good money because that helps.
Another cool thing, different than if you were just at a bar or a dance club, is that you always knew you were going to have new people in 2 hours. So
right, yes, exactly. Yeah.
And even though we had our share of drunks, people. First off, in the first dozen years, I never had a 2-drink minimum because I didn't believe in that. I think people were paying for a show, should see a show, and if they wanted to drink or have food, it was up to them. These days, you know, there's 2, 3, 4-drink minimums, or you got to buy food. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. But in those days, I didn't have all those rules. So people, I think, at a comedy club, and I always love this about being in the business, are there to be entertained and to be happy. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like you can go to a restaurant and you could be upset about something, or you're at a bar and, you know, whether you're hitting on somebody or on a date, you could have something negative happen or something negative going on around you. But at a comedy club, the entertainment factor, the fact that people paid, they're vested mm-hmm. in having a good time, makes them want to enjoy themselves. Mm-hmm. I'm glad to hear from all three of you that it was something that was a more fun experience.
Oh yeah. It was just the people were great. All the waitresses and all the other staff. It was like you're there with, you know, your family, mm-hmm. like you said. And it was just, we laughed all the time. We were always laughing. It seems like even at cleanup at the end of the night, I mean, the music's playing. I loved all the music that came on when the room is emptying and we're running around cleaning ashtrays and getting things off the table. And
millennials, ashtrays used to be in the clubs because you could smoke indoors.
Right. Yeah. So funny. But it's funny
back
that
in the day.
Something that we were talking about before we turned on the microphones is that we're all older now.
Yes.
But the truism is that we were all young then. I mean, even I was only 24, 25 when I started. Mm-hmm. You know, that's very young to be operating this kind of operation. And you talk about the live music, the loud music and stuff. I'm a product of rock and roll 60s.
Right.
And that kind of music gave us energy. And it's great that it worked for the staff, but it was there because it worked for us. We enjoyed ourselves before, during, and after the shows. Yep. And if that meant we can control the atmosphere, the environment that we had to work in, because it still work.
Right. Some of us enjoyed that after drink a little bit more than others.
And sometimes it wasn't after, apparently.
Oh, we would sneak a shot now and then.
Now and then, my best friend's cousin's in the audience. Can I buy her a drink? Yeah, sure. Here you go. Okay.
Well, it, what's
you couldn't see that, but it was me shoving a shot down my throat.
So there was, Becca. There were rules. And I found out after I sold the club and talking to ex-employees that many of those rules went out the window and I wasn't aware. I was a pretty naive boss.
I would like to say surprisingly, most of them didn't go out the window, you know.
Well, the rules were followed, but I mean, there was a rule you weren't supposed to drink during the show. The staff, of course, because you're
working. Was there really? I don't recall that on the sheet.
I had to get a real employee and got in the handbook.
That's right. Remember, I'm just filling. I'm doing you the favor, so I don't have to follow the rules.
Exactly. And what was interesting was Lynn and I were just cracking up about rule number 8. And I thought that rule number 8 was pretty well held. And I found after,
explain to the millennials, Lynn.
Making sure we towed the line. When Lynn managed us, we were, you know.
Yeah, I still think that in comparison to probably other clubs,
things were,
I think, yes, the rules were broken. And yes, you know, people once in a while did, you know.
Commingled?
No, I was, but it's like you
got out on a date.
You know, you have to think about it like after working together and bonding for so long, people were protective of the club, of where they were.
Oh, yes.
You know, if I remember Sherry would say, hey, this new person, you know, just snuck a drink and we won't have that.
Good for you, Sherry.
Right.
Of course, I was like 3 years after I found her. Never mind.
Lying about doing shots of tequila. I'm sorry, you know.
I said, well, drinks only. No premium liquor. Damn it!
Only the best.
Yeah, my cousin's best friend out in the audience, she wanted that to be a Stoli kamikaze, if you don't mind.
Well, as the owner, I had tried to establish a set of rules that I thought would protect, and Lynn and I talked about this. Sorry, audience, you're hearing it again. I had a lot of young staff, and it was not the waitresses I was really the most concerned about, because you were all adults. But Lynn came to work for me when she was 15, and then she brought her friends along, and they worked for me while they were 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, up into 20. But that's very young to be in a nightclub situation. And so the rules were there to protect really the underage, under 21 gals, and I had mostly women working for me. For some reason, I did better with women than men. I don't know why. But
don't ever change.
But it was... that was why the rules were there. And Lynn's always really quick to say that it did work and that it was better than most other nightclubs, and especially comedy clubs. And one of the reasons I had the rules was that people at other comedy clubs, it ruined comics and it ruined staffing. Mm-hmm. If they would, you know, somebody would date or have a sexual interaction, and then the next night the guy's on stage and the waitress is throwing shit at him, right? That's something you don't want the audience to have to deal with. Mm-hmm. So let's move on to the next set of questions I have. We'll start with Patty. Did you have any kind of strange or any memorable audience or stories that interactions with other staff members?
I do remember when I was working down in Old Sacramento one night, we had Scott, you were there. You'll remember this. I had three tables in the very back, four seating tables, in the very back of the room. And, I came around the corner with drinks for the rest of my section, and they were all filled, and they were filled with Hell's Angels. Do you remember that?
Yes.
That motorcycle. Remember? And so you called the beat cops in Sacramento and told me, okay, just ignore them. Well, they're in a comedy club and they're scary and they want booze.
And they were utilizing their ashtrays.
Yes, they were. Where they were conveniently cutting up their cocaine.
Right.
And
which we didn't sell.
Thanks
for making that clear.
That was not on the menu.
So that's one of the reasons.
But I did. I kind of kept walking around them. And I remember thinking, oh, this is not going to end well. This is not going to be good. And then we finally got the beat cops in and got them out, because they were loud and boisterous and they were disrupting the show. And
Yeah, and I don't know if you can do that these days with all this PC crap, but back I had the right to refuse anybody. And there was several people that if they were previously drunk or obnoxious or overly loud or thought they were
or more doing important, cocaine on ashtrays.
Or doing cocaine on ashtrays. I would just boot them out. And if I felt like I couldn't handle it myself because I was the bouncer of my own club, I would bring in the help. Sherry, did you have any interesting stories with staff or his audience?
I remember once when we were in Birdcage.
Wait, real quick, I want to say, Birdcage, by the way, is a club. We weren't...
in a Birdcage.
We weren't hanging these out.
Were the, that was the name of the mall.
Right. The strip mall. Very popular. So, sorry.
But ahead. I went to card this girl, and she put out her finger with her engagement ring on it and said, "I'm engaged." And I'm like, "Okay, congratulations. Can I see your ID?" She goes, "I'm engaged. I'm old enough." I'm like... pretty sure you're not old enough. And so the boyfriend or fiance was like getting kind of crazy, and we had to ask her to leave because she was underage.
She was like not wanting to show the ID.
No. What was it? Remember, there was someone who gave you the ID, and you recognized the person on the ID, and it wasn't
them. Yes, there was one of those.
Oh, what are the odds, right?
Yeah, exactly. Sure, hey,
Beverly, I just saw Beverly at the hair salon. I don't think you're
that
her.
That was a bad day for that person trying to use that ID. It's like, oh, crap.
What are the odds?
I had a guy, we served them, and then I don't know why I was at the table, but, you know, I said whatever the amount was, and he showed a badge and goes, "This will be our pay," or whatever. And I'm like, I was so, like, dumbfounded. I was like... No, that's not going to work. It's like this guy's a cop, and he's like trying. I was just
get out of his bill. What the
right? And I made him pay, and he kind of threatened me, like, okay,
I'll remember this.
Right.
I remember one time. This one gal was just a total jealous type, and she was there with her boyfriend, and I came over. "Hi, I'm Patty. Can I get you something to drink?" And she gave me a glare right away because I happened to look at him. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just making eye contact with him. She was just one of those women. And I said, margarita, you know, pina colada, something fun like that. And the guy turns to me and he says, "Do you have sex on the beach?" And I just right away, I just said, "Anytime I can get to the coast."
Perfect answer.
I surprised myself. And I'm telling you, you should. If she was looking daggers at me. Yeah. Looks could kill. You know, and he's cracking up. And
that's funny. Yeah. We should say, though, we had some very good looking waitresses. You guys were all bodacious and, you know, not like. What's that look, Lynn? No, they weren't like
bodacious tatas.
Not sex kits.
Free
or anything.
Millennials out there.
We're hiring for some new cocktail servers in Citrus Heights, and this very angelic kind of plain girl came in, and you know she had plenty of experience and seemed very nice. She looked very innocent and. quaint and all that, and so we hired her, and then she shows up for her shift, and I swear to God, I didn't even recognize her. She was like, I don't know, I don't remember because she didn't work out.
Let me guess, sex sells.
Oh yeah, I mean she wasn't leaving anything to the imagination. I mean she was. You don't remember? She was like unrecognizable. She was just like
stop to think.
What did you do?
I don't remember. It didn't. Well. We were not the Playboy Bunny Club, so I don't think she was happy with – I mean, it turned out not to be her gig either.
Oh, good.
But she literally was like
– Yeah.
She wanted a bar where those looks would make her more money. Literally in
a
comedy club.
Probably people wanted a poll to – That wasn't
the – But you know what? That's so great that I met these girls at Laughs Unlimited. How many years ago? And we're
three.
Still
– More like 35.
Okay. But we're still so close and such good friends. And that speaks to the environment of Laughs Unlimited.
Well, and that brings it back to what Sherry was saying is it wasn't just a job. It was fun. And it was, and we did a lot of stuff outside of the club. In fact, I'm going to go off of my script. Do you guys remember some of the things that, who here of the three of you went to bowling night?
it's a podcast, Scott, so the raising of the hand.
Well, I was going to say.
Let the record show that Sherry and Scott are the only ones raising hands.
Well, Lynn was there.
Apparently,
was there.
My invitation to bowling night got lost in the mail.
Well, it was a Wednesday night thing, and you never filled in on Wednesdays. So.
There you go. And then we went. We had the boat. We sometimes took the staff out on the houseboats after Jazz Festival.
Again, an invitation lost in the mail.
We went on a bus to see the Oakland A's.
Yeah. We took the whole staff to an Oakland A's game. Okay. How about we went to
poor
the
poor Reds?
Well, listen, I'm going to run.
Poor Reds. We went to poor Reds. And then
poor
we
Reds. Oh, yeah. I was there. Gold Cadillacs. Poor Reds. Ribs. Yeah.
And then we went to the water park down in.
So it's a jazz festival trip.
Yeah, Jazz Fest. But what park is that? It's down Manteca. Like a
Manteca.
That's right. We got a bus and we loaded it up with staff and went down to the Manteca Water Park. But I mean, those kind of things, I think, made us bond a little bit better. And again, having kind of a young, naive boss where everybody was treated with trust and respect, I think made it a good work environment. So we talked about working with the audience and the staff. So Pat, we'll start with you, Patty. What experiences, unique, good or bad, that you had with any of the entertainers? Well, Lynn's laughing already. Where are we going? Well, you were dating Tony, for a couple of years.
But after that, you know, I remember coming in with Ben Tony one time when Dana Carvey was there. And he was so funny. And I came back another night. I also did that with Larry
Miller.
Miller.
Very funny.
Yeah. So
you just named two of the best comics.
Oh, yeah. Cracked me up. I think I came back four nights in a row. And that Lynn Stobner, she was funny, too. Yes.
Lynn's pointing at herself.
Hilarious female comic. But I don't remember.
You never had any problems then.
Oh, no. I never had any problems with them. Everyone I, you know, had any contact with.
Sherry?
Nice. Nope. I thought very, very nice.
Yeah.
The time that we were at Laughs Unlimited downtown and Harry
Anderson?
Harry Anderson.
Yeah.
Jay Johnson.
Yeah.
Big shows. They were great guys doing magic tricks for us, the staff afterwards and stuff. It was always fun.
I liked it when you brought your little boys into the Meet the Comics.
Oh, I know. Yeah. They love the comics.
Well, Jay Johnson was a world famous ventriloquist and been on the TV show
Soap.
And then Harry Anderson, everybody knows from
Night Court
and Cheers, was a very good comic magician. And they were very good friends and would often work together at the club, which was just a blessing for me because I love both of them and I got them in a package. But you're right. We would meet with them after the show at the Magic Hat or out in the front bar. And they were happy to entertain and keep things going even after the audience was long gone.
Yeah, that was fun.
I remember a post show night, I guess it was, when we went out with Stevie Starr, the Regurgitator. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
And we were at Fridays. Were you at that episode?
Who was this?
Stevie Starr. He's called the Human Regurgitator.
Some people might remember him. He was just on
America's Got Talent.
A few years ago, yeah.
Yeah, and he's also an amazing close-up magician. So we're sitting at Fridays, and he has the salt and pepper shakers in front of him, and he takes the pepper shaker, and it looks like he swallowed it.
Oh.
And then he brings it back up.
But
I also know he's an amazing close-up magician. So to this day, I have no idea how he does what he does.
He did the same thing upstairs at the Magic Hat when he took my wedding rings and took them and swallowed them. I'm like, oh, Jesus, how am I going to explain this?
Tell my husband somebody swallowed my rings.
He's like, did you want your rings back? I'm like, sure, dude, yeah.
Well, did you just come from the bathroom?
I just spit them up. I was like, what the hell? Where were those?
But he actually made a living swallowing and then bringing back stuff, or the great regurgitator. And
I don't even remember him.
And he played for us a couple times.
Yeah, he did live goldfish. He did a light bulb.
Oh, gosh. All kinds of
the stuff. Light bulb always freaked me out.
Yeah.
And like Lynn said, some of it was prestidigitation, and some of it was he actually was able to swallow things and get it so far down his esophagus and bring it back up. But it was that you were mentioning he did it once at a restaurant. I remember once that, and it might have been the same trip, but just as he's coughing up a salt and pepper shaker, here comes the waitress. And she saw this and screamed, you know, like, what? What's going on?
That's disgusting.
Yeah.
But it was when things came up, they were very
Clean.
Yes.
Clean and
tidy. Oh, yeah. They weren't snotty or anything. No, they were. Yes. Weren't covered in saliva. So in dealing with the comics, though, you pretty much had good experiences and nobody was out of hand. Because I know that there's a problem in other clubs where the comics could get kind of handsy. And I've heard after the fact, after I sold the club, that a couple of the waitresses were having after-show shenanigans with some of the entertainers.
Shenanigans is... Intercourse.
Yeah, intercourse.
Code. That's a code word.
Yeah, coitus, as Sheldon would say.
You might know that.
So anyway, but even then, they weren't being mistreated. They were just having relationships.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Well, and I know there were a couple that dated, and actually dated the comics, long-term dating.
I may not be aware of that.
Old sack. Yeah.
I just remember Mary and Milt Abel because he does a whole bit on it now.
Oh, does he?
Oh, you guys haven't heard it?
No.
I just
was it about Mary? Mary?
I was not looking at Milt Abel's stuff on Facebook just the other day. He came across as a suggested friend on Facebook. So I dropped him a little note saying, "Hey, remember me?" And I went and looked at his page. I'd forgotten all about him. He was so hilarious.
I probably can't do it justice, but it's pretty funny because he says he's lying in bed with Mary, and Mary's phone rings. She answers the phone, and she goes, "Oh, well, you know, I'm with somebody." "No, no, no, not him." "No." "Oh, I wish." And Milt's sitting there listening. And the funniest one is he goes, "Oh, not them."
You know?
Anyway, we should talk ill of Mary. She's a sweetheart. She worked for me for years, but she was having coitus, breaking rule number 8 with a very, very dear friend of mine, Milt Abel, who I just worked with a show last year. And he'll be soon guesting as an interview on the podcast. And maybe I'll have him tell the story because he does it even funnier. So that's evidence right there that there was some shenanigans going on that I was not aware of. But overall, though, you guys felt like it was a good experience.
They were all respectful. The guys were fun.
But you guys were also got experience working with comedians, and there weren't a lot of female comics in the day. But maybe there was somebody that stood out. I know, Sherry, you mentioned Ellen earlier, and she's obviously world famous now. But who were some of the other women comics that you thought made a difference on stage?
Diane Nichols.
Yeah, Diane Nichols was good. And that Laughs Unlimited is where I first met Carla. And we're friends today.
Oh, Carla Ray.
Carla Ray.
Out of Las Vegas. She's a radio personality in Las Vegas. Still does comedy.
KKLZ. Woohoo.
She is so freaking strong. I mean, I just saw her about 6 months ago.
She lifting weights now? She means strong on stage.
Oh my
gosh,
she's just like
I would love to see her again perform comedy. That I haven't seen her bit in a long, long time, so that would be fun.
What? Millennials, a bit is a
one of my favorites was Lois Bromfield.
Oh, yeah.
She had that. Remember that great bit about the women in the
Sorority Girls from Hell, which you should go look up on YouTube. It's
on there, and they did
the
a video of it.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
Sorority Girls from Hell.
Yeah,
check out the video. It's hilarious. But when she does that bit live on stage, it is so funny.
Oh yeah.
But we had a lot of Carol Leifer, who's hilarious, came through the club.
Who Patty is very much alike.
Oh yeah, and also thank you. I've been told that. But also, I think, isn't she the one that Seinfeld patterned the character Elaine in Seinfeld's show after?
Carol Leifer,
yeah,
yes.
That's right.
And also Paula Poundstone started off as an opening act for me. She had come out from back east and was living in San Francisco, was struggling as an act, and worked her way up to a headliner while working at Laughs.
I always liked Paula Poundstone. She had good stuff, really good stuff, strong set.
Okay, now the ladies are whispering, which you really can't do.
It's hard to remember 40 years ago.
I
got this little age thing going on.
Ginkgo biloba. Yeah. Make sure you have your...
Put down the joint. So go ahead.
I really liked Karen Anderson.
Oh, yeah.
Karen Anderson. We should talk about Karen. Karen was actually from Sacramento, and she started off as an MC/opening act and ended up being one of the head writers for the Ellen DeGeneres Show, but many other TV shows, and she's still writing today.
Yeah, that's great.
Good Karen Anderson is a very funny young lady.
Yeah.
Very funny. For a while there, we looked very similar and we dressed very similar, so it messed with people's heads when she was working the club and I was there too. And because we had like the same kind of permed hair and doing the international female comedian wardrobe, which was the blazer over the t-shirt. That's
right. For you fashion people.
Yeah.
Fashionistas. There you go. Well, I think it's good that we talk about the female comics because there, to be honest, there weren't a lot, and because there weren't a lot, they weren't in the club that much. But they several were developed at the club: Karen Anderson, Cheryl the Soccer Mom, and a few others who've gone on and done well and or stayed in comedy. And then we were lucky enough to have those that ended up being pretty good celebrities: Carol Leifer and Paula Poundstone and Ellen, just to name a couple. Lois Bromfield is still entertaining and doing great. Oh, almost forgot. Another one of my favorites. You guys remember Laura Kilmartin?
Oh, yeah, Lori Kilmartin.
That's
who it is.
Yes.
I was wondering.
That was
the monkey butt pink
dress. Oh, what was the bit? She was at a wedding?
That's right. Yeah, she works.
What was the bit, Sherry?
She was doing the bit about she's always been a bridesmaid, never a bride, and there's like so many shades of pink, and she goes, and which one do I get? Monkey butt pink. Monkey butt pink. I love it.
Everyone knows that. Lori
Kilmartin was a hoot. She lives back in New York now and is raising a child and still doing comedy. She's doing really well. Well, that's a great shout out to the comedians in the business. Well, we're going to go on to our next subject. So stay tuned. Now here to celebrate women in comedy, here's a nice Sacramento set from Paula Poundstone.
To nail down the Comedy Oasis job. I'm able to go to Winnipeg and Sacramento. I'm feeling pretty good about it. The Tonight Show's nothing when you compare it to Sacramento. Unlimited laughs, you guys. What more could you ask for? Actually, Jay loves the road. I like it, okay? It gets a little depressing, though, sometimes. I was in Cleveland a couple weeks ago. I ran into Chevette and tried to drive into a tree and kill myself. Well, as it turns out, you can't get up enough speed to do that in a Chevette. You know what you can do? You can knock the Kleenex box off the dashboard. Which certainly vents a good deal of feeling. Are there a lot of tourists here? And then the locals are going to get their butts kicked in the playoff game, I think. I'm trying to think if I've done anything summery or vacationy. I don't really too much. I'm always edgy in the summer because my parents recently bought a Winnebago, which means they could pull up in front of my house any day now and just live there. I'll tell you what, they're not plugging anything in. They're not getting any water. They should have thought of that a long time ago. When I was a little kid, my mom would get mad at me. She'd say, "Your butt is my meat." I always wondered, what wine goes with that? I don't know if it messed me up or not, but I talk to a shrink pretty much every day now. I say, you know, the thing about seeing a shrink is you really can't pay someone to take an interest. You know what I mean? There's nothing worse than realizing that piece of paper your shrink is writing on is a crossword puzzle. It was a dead giveaway. I told her something about my mom. She said, mm-hmm. And who played 99 on Get Smart? I said, well, Barbara Feldon, why? Mm-hmm. And how do you feel about that? It's like, guess I'm kind of mad. I had always wanted Karen Valentine to have that role. As it turns out, a lot of my sexual problems has to do with casting in sitcoms in the early 70s. I would like to do a remake of that movie, It's a Wonderful Life, where in the beginning of the film, I jump off the bridge and the angel rescues me and shows me what life would have been like without me. Only it turns out it really would have been a whole lot better. And the angel is forced to apologize. It was last month's Life magazine. They were talking about old movies. They said The Wizard of Oz was reviewed badly when it first came out. Did you read this? Yeah, they said it was stupid and unimaginative. What if it turns out Rambo 3 was really good? And they show it every Easter. I'll tell you, I understand that you guys liked the Batman movie. I'm not going to see it. I figure I've seen it frame by frame in t-shirts that have walked by me at this point. Enough with the Batman movie. I liked the television show when it was out, you know. So you know why I think the criminals always got caught on that show? It's because they wore their names on their outfits. The Riddler wore a green leotard with question marks on it. Exactly how hard is that going to be to identify? Why, yes, officer, I believe that's him. Unless, of course, the Ice Capades has a punctuation theme this year.
Hey, I hope you enjoyed that. That was Paula Poundstone. When Paula first came out from Boston to San Francisco, she got stage time at Laughs Unlimited as an opening act, and she was one of the only acts that worked consecutive weeks as she honed her sets for the audience. It was a real pleasure to work with her. She turned out to be a very talented star in comedy. So let's get back to our interview with our waitresses. So, wait a minute, you had good jobs, you made good tips, you had a good family experience, and you liked the comics. I guess the podcast's over. There's nothing controversial here.
No. Yeah, right, I guess
I stayed there for 8 years. When I stopped to think about it, 8 years.
Yeah, that's a long time.
We were talking about how long the staff, like Lynn was saying, she had very little turnover on the waits, on the hostess staff.
Right.
And they were all family and friends of Lynn's. I was so blessed to have her there. Mm-hmm. But even in the waitresses, mm-hmm. you were there 8 years. I know Mary was there like 10 or 12. How long? Now, you weren't really an employee.
I was only fill-in. So
but how long did you fill in?
Several years, yeah. I think. Yeah. But I loved it. I mean, I honestly, if I could handle it right now, I couldn't do the squatting with, you know, long neck beers on a tray, but I would do that job today if I could. If I could go back and it was all of us, it would just I'd do it.
Again. Oh, it would be so much fun.
When you think about it, you know, what do you do generally, you know, with on the weekends? You go out with friends. So this was like going out with friends, but you had to do a little bit of work.
And then you got paid.
You went home
with a lot of cash in your pocket.
That's good. It was really perfect. It was a great job.
So, Sherry, let me ask you, as we're wrapping up a little bit here, you saw a number of really good entertainers, but who stood out as somebody you thought, wow, they're going to be big stars, or you just really enjoyed them? I'll give you a quick example. Larry Miller was one of my personal favorites. He has been in several movies. He's been on a lot on TV, but quite frankly, he's not a household name, but he's got to be one of the funniest human beings on the planet. But so that's give you a range. Who did you feel really stood out or that you thought was funny or ended up being famous?
Well, Carlos Alice Rocky was a local boy that did good.
Yeah.
Totally loved and followed him.
Yeah.
Still do. Rocco and all that fun stuff.
Yeah, he went on to what she's talking about, Rocco's. He went Rocco's Modern Times. Life. He ended up being the main voice on that cartoon, and he actually did several other
cartoons. And he also did Yer Quiero Taco Bell.
And he did.
Oh, the Taco Bell dog.
And didn't he do Reno 911 or something?
Yes, he was on Reno 911. So he's had a good career.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But he started off as an opening act for us.
Yeah, right. That's right. I remember.
Right.
So Carlos Alice Rocky. Anybody else?
Well.
Oh, Bob Worley, for sure.
Bob Worley was always our favorite.
Always.
Clean. And he was so much fun.
And he was fun. He would stick around after the show and just, you know, fool around with all of us.
Fool around. Millennials.
No, not
fool
that
fool around is not shenanigans.
No, he's very married and has two kids.
Yeah.
By the way, Bob and I and his lovely wife, Bernice, and my wife, Jill, we're all friends. We go down and visit him. He still lives in South Pasadena. And we take him out to dinner at least twice a year and always have a great time. He's doing really well. But I'll pass along that he was mentioned.
Yeah.
So Bob Worley, Carlos. So it's interesting that you mentioned those two guys because you guys actually got to see people like Seinfeld, Carvey, Leno, Harry Anderson, Paula Poundstone.
Ellen.
Sorry?
Ellen.
You remember Ellen being there?
Ellen DeGeneres.
Yeah.
A lot of people remember that. She only worked 1 week and she was the feature act, which means for those out there, my audience, she wasn't a headliner. She was just working her way up and she was a featured act and worked for us for a week. And we got a chance to work with her after her shows about her set. And now I think people have heard of her.
Yeah.
Ellen? Yes.
Yeah.
She's a little bit of a household name. Yeah.
I let her close for me in Stockton once.
Oh, she closed.
Wow. Very
that
good.
That is very cool.
Lynn, as the manager of the Stockton Club, had the prerogative to...
Well, no, it wasn't actually. It was not a Laughs gig.
Oh.
It was, oh. I don't know who... Well, no, I think they... No, it was with... I don't remember. I'm old now.
40 years. Yeah. Starting to show a little bit.
Well, that'll be really good on the podcast. Yeah. Oh, I got a great story, but I don't remember.
Middled for her. No, I opened for her because it was at the college there. What's that university?
Sierra College.
Oh, University of the Pacific.
Yeah.
And then I brought her back to the Stockton Club after the show.
Oh,
so
cool.
She could see it. And yeah, that's it.
Oh, cool. We'll see. I don't remember that. That's a good story. We took the long path, but we got to the end.
Yeah.
Patty, what were some of the comics that you really enjoyed working with? You mentioned Bob Worley.
Yeah. Milt Abel. I always loved Milt's performance. He was great. And of course, Larry Miller, Dana Carvey, you know, like I said, he was just great when he came back and did that week for you. Because that was, I think, as I recall, right after he got Saturday Night Live.
Yeah,
that gig, but he had to go early back to New York, so he kind of missed a week on his contract with you, I think. So he said, "I owe you one," and he darned if he didn't come back.
He and Jerry Seinfeld both did that. Jerry had to cancel a week when he got the Seinfeld show, did the first season, and then came back and worked for me for a week. Mm-hmm. Now, sadly, the first season of Seinfeld actually wasn't that popular, but it was still great to have him come back and honor that. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to Larry Wilson earlier. About how there is a difference between your average everyday stand-up comic and a true professional. We've had the honor to work with some great professionals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, ladies, it's been a real honor to get to see you again. And from my heart, thank you for the hours of work and Patty, in your case, volunteering that you did at the clubs back in the 80s and 90s. And Lynn, all of it's because of you. So thank you for being here.
Yes, everything is because of me. Everything.
Well, I didn't mean it quite
well,
like
thanks
that.
Thanks for the trip down memory lane. This was fun.
Yeah, I hope you guys had a good time. Yeah. We hope the audience got a kick out of it and got a little bit of a behind the scenes feel for what it was like to waitress in a comedy club. Anyway, thank you for listening. Patty Sewell, thanks for coming out. By the way, a really good author, and she had a book just come out. Sherry Morissette, a great mother of two amazing boys. Three. Sure. Well,
two boys, one girl.
And one girl.
Well, the two boys are amazing. The girl, I don't know.
Yeah, she's okay. She'll be fine.
She's a doll.
Three amazing kids. And of course, Lynn, you guys all know. So thank you very much for listening. And we appreciate everybody coming out. Everybody on the podcast, be sure to share this. Don't be shy about reviewing it and rating it. And we thank you very much for listening. Stay tuned for another episode next week. Thanks for coming out. Thanks, ladies.
Tip your wait staff.
You.
Don't just tip them. Push them all the way over.
Oh, God. I
forgot
that.
Awesome.
That was some fun.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Stand Up Comedy, Your Host and MC. For information on the show, merchandise, and our sponsors, or to send comments to Scott, visit our website at www.standupyourhostandmc.com. Look for more episodes soon and enjoy the world of stand-up comedy. Visit a comedy showroom near you.